driveway.
Good. So a slight change of schedule. First of all, I have a train to catch at 2:30, and I found that the most popular speakers are the ones that have a catch to train. And I even know there was once a speaker that the desperate MC made a reservation on a train for him just to have him catch a train. So so what I do want to do is I want to make a slight change as follows. The last half hour or so, I want to dedicate to a different topic, not economy as much as, I guess, a continuation of yesterday's discussion, to sort of give a crisper sense of what I think our mission is over here and so on. So it'll be sort of a separate entity on its own until the train does cut me off, Bez Hashem. So,
moral hygiene.
What?
Moral hygiene.
Okay. So yesterday we'd gotten to the following points. The engine of economy by the Torah's perspective is called greed or desire for acquisition and so on. That's very powerful. We have a society regulating economy. So we had the obvious, which is to provide the minimal in terms of a law and order structure. So that's the middos that you're regulating. The second element we had was common good that can never be determined by individual, like pollution, that's lo yachpar, you know, smoking and stuff like that pollutes, and you need to be able to do something as a community. Third, we didn't mention it yesterday, so I'm going to skip ahead a drop. There's a Gemara in Bava Basra, and the Rama passes it. Koifin b'nei achotz azeh azeh, to build certain things. In other words, constructing projects that are needed for everyone can be publicly imposed. So if we need a new highway, need a new airport, things like that, that also makes a lot of sense. Those are things that couldn't be done unless the public was all on board. To have people build pirate roads would be incredibly crazy. So different things like that can be imposed, and those are the more obvious ones. We then come to something that is, that we have the where you have contentions between different personal rights, such as my right to play music, your right to have some peace and quiet. That has different takanis, that's fine. Finally, we come to the area that seems to us the most difficult one, and that is price control. By the way, this was something that was current in Israel until the Mapach of, I guess it was sometime during Begin's government, the basic staples were controlled. There were price controls on staples, and milk, bread, and eggs, and stuff like that had a very, very strong price control on it. So it's something that was actually in effect in Israel and then became abolished, reestablished, back and forth. But it is something that actually, to a degree, exists in modern-day Israel. People still would like to have different provisions for staples. And halacha, we have here a machlokas, if you can enforce a price control or not. Our problem was, it's a machlokas in the Gemara, to understand the different sides of machlokas and how Chazal looked at the interplay between market realities and price controls. So let's go back again to page 10 and 11 of my pages. In page 11, we had Rishoyim de'ir lahasos ala midos v'ala she'orim v'alzchar po'alim, that they can impose price controls. That's what it says in Chesamet Beis in Bava Basra. And in Pei Tesamet Aleph, in page 10, it says, machlokas, whether we enforce it or not. Some people pointed out that it's not clear if they're talking about, does the Gemara in Pei Tes assume for granted that you can, and the question is about enforcing, or is it just another way of talking about enforcement? that was a question people raised, and it is quite not clear in the Gemara. What? Right. So the question is, does it mean we don't at all make the controls, we don't bother to make it, or does it mean we don't have to enforce it because it'll enforce itself? It's appropriate, somebody comes, it's appropriate for Besen to say, these will be the prices, but we need not to do anything about it. So I want to look at three or four shittas here, and we've shown them, and quote Baal Peh one or two, so that we'll get a sense of how different Chazal looked at the interplay between market forces and this. So the Rashbam, again, the Rashbam we did yesterday, but I just wanted so that we have a cohesive entity. Ve'eim amidin agardamin l'sharim, shal yimkur b'yosa, svaru de netzarech, dim zero to limkur b'yoke, osat zarech l'mos yitain b'zol, v'il chalokin etzlo, v'yimkur zeh b'zol akarchot. So the one who holds that you don't put price controls is because market forces will naturally take care of it. We also spoke yesterday about the difference between fair market forces or manipulative forces. If somebody artificially creates a lack of something, we have a problem with it. Now, the sheet in the Rashbam as to why you do impose it, the Gemara says, Mneha Ramoyen. The word Ramoyen does sound that it has nothing to do with the fact that we want everybody to enjoy bread, or it's not bread, flour or wine, but there's some fooling around going on. So Rashbam has two shittas. Here they are, Moim. Shemamtinen atshim kos amochem bezol, v'chakech mochem biyoke. So it says they will create an artificial spike in the price by not letting out all the tefillah in one shot. It is a little strange where Rashbam says it, because if, let's say, 90% of the tefillah has been sold, the 10% that's coming out to the market deserves a higher price, because at this stage there's only X amount left over. One would think that we'd be afraid that they would hide 90% and leave it there to create a higher price for the other one. But be it as it may, that's the first part in Rashbam. So Rashbam says, Mipnei Ramoyim means because of manipulative market forces. We're not trying to upend the market, we're trying to make a level playing field that allows for the natural supply and demand to act. Loshen achrina, ne'ramoyim amochim b'yoke, ve'om shasifu b'midot shenas ritni afmala. So the second pshat in Rashbam, and many of you shown him say this, is because of other types of bad practices. When you allow prices to become very low, you're going to allow for false goods, shoddy goods, stolen goods, etc., etc. So basically in the Rashbam itself, what we do see is that if the market was fair and the prices were allowed to be natural market prices, we would not impose any type of restriction on those market prices. The reason for it is because the market takes care of itself. The only reason why we impose these things are in order to disallow negative practices that undermine the economic structure. Rabbi Negershim over here, when he speaks about why you can't, and Negershim is on the left over here, he says, V'lo l'sha'arim, it's sort of towards the bottom, very close to the bottom. V'lo l'sha'arim, she'kol odom yesh lo rishus lehoket v'oso, im yofu mishal chaveroi, val kach lo yemayet hamida. So he says, the reason why we don't control the prices are because a person has the right to put whatever price he wants. He adds because it's yofu mishal chavero. In other words, if I feel my produce is better, it's the only way you'll ever sell your produce for a higher price than anybody else is because of that. So that's no right for that. Why would we impose? So then Ben Gershom says, V'lo l'sha'arim, yeah, mipnei aramoyim, sh'li arev ra b'yofe, yimkirene b'yoke k'yofe, ala yofe yimko b'yofe v'ra b'ra. So Ben Gershom also says that it's to prevent some sort of shady dealings. Nothing to do with allowing for the market, with making things provided for everyone at a reasonable price. There is a Piske Rid here that says a fascinating shot. He says the reason we don't impose price controls is so that there not be a shortage of tefuah. You impose price controls, you're going to get a shortage. And therefore, so it's obvious that he feels you should, and the reason we don't is because it's going to be counterproductive. Okay, let's take a look. Sorry?
Okay. I mean, which is, there's an incredible amount of empirical evidence. I mean, this year anticipated by what, 6, 7 years?
Yeah, now it seems to be very natural. I mean, the less tefuah, there'll be more, and so on. One second, okay. We will get to the other Gemara Babasi. Yes, look at page 15 now. This is so right now we've seen two Gemaras that seem pretty much in line. That the Gemara on page 15 has a very I'm not as comprehensive as it could be. There's a Mishnah in Bar Metzia that seems to have a machlokas about can you give things for cheaper or not? One on Yom says Tovah LaBracha. Let's go to 15 because that's a key gemara. Tanya Nami Hochi. It says this is the same gemara I started yesterday about Mafkir Sharim, people who manipulate the marketplace by selectively. Not bringing to the market, withholding from the market material that would give the natural price to things. Now the Gemara continues. Tanya Amarke, Ein Otsim Peiris Dvorim Sheish Mechai Nefesh Kegon Yenos Shmanim Vesaltos Avlin Tavlin Kmona Pilplin Muta Bamed Ramur Lokech Menashuk, and so on. And then the Gemara says, Ton Rabbanon, the last lines, Ein Motzien Peiris Meretz Yisrael, Dvorim Sheish Mechai Nefesh. And the Gemara says that you can't take out stuff that has Chai Nefesh. So the Gemara here makes a special category of things that are Chai Nefesh, basic material that you can't, basic material that people need to subsist on, you cannot take out of Eretz Yisrael, you cannot hoard it, you can, the Gemara speaks about profit and so on. Let's take a look at how the Rambam brings this Gemara, because this is the strongest case of price control. Let's take a look at page 23. Kfar bi'arnu. Shehanose. He says, if you tell a person, so the Rambam is talking about the halacha of honor. Honor means cheating somebody. Cheating somebody means where you sell it for a price that is 20% above the market. It's a sixth. When you add it, it's 20%. You know, it's 20% of your price more. So, for instance, everyone sells it for 80, you sell it for 100. Everybody else sells it for 100, you sell it for 120, and that's onar. So the Rambam says, if a person is upfront and he says, I have a 50% markup on this, there's no honor. Vafilo amazalakhti bisalo be esani mochamuta. Avol. Bezdin chayovim lifsok ashorim ulahamit shotan lakach. Bezdin is mechuyev to impose impose on it a shar, how much it's what the maximum price is. Voloye kol echot vechot mistake koma sheyirtze. That's a Gemara from Peites of Abbasra, same Gemara with the beginning of what we saw. You have a price control of 20%. 20% of the sales price is the maximum that you're allowed to have as profit. And he should not make more than that. Beis. By medra amur b'dvon sheish b'mchai nefesh, go yeno shmane v'saltos, avul ha'ikrin, ki goin ha'koyish tal avoynik yitze behen, and knows all sorts of luxuries. And then he lists Gimel and Dalid and Hey, are all, and Vav as an exception, are all different types of regulations for commerce that apply to chai nefesh, things that we impose regulation. So the question here is, first of all, where does this halacha come from? And let me explain, is this a hilchos tzedaka? In other words, it's a takana as a result of what? So, why don't we give tzedaka? Everybody has to give tzedaka. So, it's interesting the way the Rambam structures this halacha. The Rambam says, it's a hilchos mechira. I would expect this to be a hilchos tzedaka, or as an addendum to takanis that somebody was metakin. It's a very strange segue. He says, Rabbeisai, you're not allowed to sell stuff that is overmarked and overpriced. If the person knows about it, it's okay. But we have to impose rules and regulations to cover that. What exactly, where's that coming from? I could understand that they would, let's say I'm going to say, Ukvar Nohagu, they did it, or Minig Yof or some of that. He says, Beznes Chayev. Where exactly, if it's Hilchot Tzedakah belongs to Hilchot Tzedakah, it's a strange segue from this. So, I'm sorry, it sounds as if somewhere along the line is this or no, but it's not. I mean, the Rambam says, I'm straightforward to you. I tell you like my story yesterday with Rebbe Zalig Shisberg. I am ripping you off. This esrig is worth $100 and I'm selling to you for $600.
If we don't make it done, people aren't going to always be as straightforward.
He doesn't say that. I don't see that.
There's no difference in dinner and law between chai nefesh and...
So let me tell you what this is something that really, the simple pshat people learn as v'chei achicha imach, and let's that's one way of taking this Rambam around is as follows. The chi of tzedaka, more than nasan titein, than giving, is v'chei achicha imach. Allow other people to live. Give space to someone else also. It's what goes into the iser of kapaskas l'chayi. In other words, what allows for local monopolies, if there's a gated community or sort of a self-contained community, there's one shoe store, I can't open up because it's hasagas gvul, because there's a chayi nefesh. I am drawing sustenance from here. If you plant yourself here, you're drying me out. So it's a very, very powerful form of tzedakah, where tzedakah, the Rambam says, the first madrega is to have the person give the person a job. So the v'chei achicha imach means before nasan titan, before even giving a person needs, allow the person to have. So that means give each one the space for a job. So for instance, if we have a big marketplace, a Machne Yehuda, everybody can open up a place because nobody's taking away the other person's livelihood. Another thing, let's say I happen to sell blueberries out of my backyard, but it's not my livelihood, there's no iser kapasas l'chaye. So along the line, things that are vital as a consumer, we have the same gather of kapasas l'chaye. So what's the difference if you don't allow me to make a living or you don't allow me to buy goods? It's like in communist Russia. Everybody earned a very well, but there was nothing to buy. I mean, what difference does it make if you don't have money to buy apples or no apples to buy? It's basically the same thing. The question is just, do you have to steal the money or the apples? But it's sort of an academic issue. There's no real nafgemina. It was like the farce, and I was in Russia in 87, it was communist. The highest salary was not Chas V'Sholom, the head of the Communist Party. He was a tzaddik. He was an ascetic. He didn't. He made less. A full tenured professor made the highest salary in Russia because they valued education. He made 500 ruble a month. In all of Russia, there was nothing to buy 500 ruble. Everything was in the Copernicus, and there were no goods. The head of the Communist Party, the Secretary General, made 400 ruble a month, but he had imported stuff from France and England, every place else, for a few kopecks per stuff. So officially he was a tzaddik, he didn't take, he took only kedei mechiyose, but it made no difference. So what's the difference? So the v'chei achichimach means allow for people to live. So that means goods that are necessary, and the word chayi nefesh rings with that. So that's many learned shot that's what it falls in that category. It makes a lot of sense. Yes.
Would that be only for goods that are necessary? Only for
yes, chayin nefesh. Yes.
Can the Rambam talk about chayin nefesh only?
The Rambam says, "Bamed dvarim amurim, bedvarim sheish bem chayin nefesh." Okay. And if somebody tells you wine is a luxury, the Rambam says wine is chayin nefesh. So you can, the chassidim have it right. What? It's actually funny. Bread is considered a luxury. Flour is considered a necessity. Bread, baked bread is a luxury, but flour is a necessity. There's another way that I would venture to say, and it would fit much better with the structure, Rambam. Let's go back to Oina. And let's think a minute about it. If I sell you something, it's not what I said it is. I told you it's Diet Coke, and instead it's water. So fine, that's cheating and so on and so forth. I sell you this. This is a Diet Coke, and I'm selling it to you for $10. And you agree to it. Now, you find out that it only costs $2. Well, but why would that cancel the sale? You were willing to pay $10 for it. For you, it's worth $10. I told you it's $10. So what is the root of a no? Where does it come from? So whatever it is, and it's something to think about, at the end of the day, the gap between what it can be bought for and what it's sold for is something that is up for question. And therefore, a shtus is what the Torah said is the appropriate markup. So when a person buys something, and by the way, this is an appropriate markup after all expenses and everything else. It depends if a person sells it retail, wholesale. 20% is above and beyond cost. The Torah said that is an appropriate markup. If I'm up front and I tell you I've marked it up 200%, it's called a mechila. In other words, you said a mochel. But there is something about the Torah giving that as the appropriate markup. Because mechate, so I can take something I paid for 10 and gave it to you. In chayin nefesh, so we said that we force people to stay within a getter that the Torah gave as appropriate. It sounds as if the Rambam is saying that. What's a svara, what's a seichel? I don't know. But it definitely sounds closer to that in the Rambam than saying that it's mehilchos tzedakah and so on. Yes?
How are you paid for a mechila?
We're craving a person never to take that price. If I give you another $100, then you're right. But the Chazal will pay for the person. It's certainly a Chazal kfir. They will pay for people not to take more so that...
No, that you're not being paid for, if it's mechila, then you have to be paid for the...
Because it'll affect the other person. You're right. At the end of the day, we're not worried about the person who wants to buy it for that price. We're worried about the person who can't buy it for that price. That's obviously what we're worried about. So now, there are different exceptions for this, and it's important to note the exceptions because they're very applicable. There's a rush that we saw, it brings a rimagash, it's on page 16. The rush says, V'rabbeisim v'alevizal, the rimagash, kosav, ובלבד שמויכה כשאר חנבונים. אבל מויכה יוסף בזול, אין מעקבים עליו, כיוון שהוא טוב לבני העיר. Over there he's talking about a person comes into a city to sell goods and undersell the people who sell in the city. So he says if he's not underselling them, the people in the city have a right to exclude him, because like we said before, each person's place of residence is his primary source of parnasa. But the Rimagash says if he's underselling them, it's for the general good of the community. Other people have a right to buy it cheaper. Yes, I have a right for parnasa, but part of your parnasa is being able to buy goods cheaper. And therefore, since we have that conflicting need, we allow him to compete because it keeps the prices down. So the rush has an exception that if the prices are kept cheaper by outside competition, and that you can do. One.
How does he know that? What's,
Well, they come to the Rav and they say, Rebbe, this guy came in with a truckload of sacks and he's selling. So yes, what price are you selling sacks? What price are you selling sacks for? What?
He's setting up shop here. Or
yeah, he's setting up shop.
One-time.
Any type. This is talking about people who came in as peddlers. So competition as a way of keeping prices down is very important. One.
No,
he says as a svara. The Rimagash says you can't tell me that. What's the pshat? We all have a right. We live here. We all have a right to make our living here. But if my making a living is at your expense, you can if you let somebody else in, price will go down. It's very. I'll tell you where it's very common. In smaller communities, this is a very big struggle. You have kosher stores. So you have a kosher store who inevitably is going to be more expensive than Kaskow or the ShopRite or whatever it is. So now, Silver Spring is relevant. You have two kosher stores, three kosher stores, and Kaskow wanted a hashgacha on their baked goods. So people are up in arms. You'll take away the panasa. They brought in chickens, brought this, brought that. So the first thing you see in the rush is that when you're looking to see personal chai nefesh, you also need to look at the other side. One. Two, the tour brings, and I'm abbreviating because the tour brings, if it doesn't mean 20% flat if the market price is substantially higher. So for instance, let's take chai nefesh flour. So let's say a bag of flour, the rabbanim sit down and they figure out it costs $100 to produce a sack of flour, mark it up with 20%, with $20, and you're there. So but the market sells it for $150. They're not mechuyev. You keep the market price. The question is, if the Rabbanim said to sell at 120, how did the market price get to be 150? So that's a shaila. That's the shaila they talk about. So one answer is you have goyim, or you have people that didn't have to listen to Rabbanim. So just because this guy is a neb and he's a frum guy, you don't make him suffer, and he should sell it at a loss when everybody else. Or this whole din is when the market hasn't determined that price. In other words, when you allow for free flow of the goods, that's what some shittas hold. And that's where it leveled up because of supply and demand, you don't make an artificial low price. And that's an incredible point. In other words, 20% is where the market, and it's more of a monopoly. In other words, if let's say there are two or three stores that sell flour, we can set the price. So in other things, in luxury items, we couldn't care less. We don't impose anything. Charge $1,000 for the painting. People won't buy it, they won't buy it. It's your problem. In chai nefesh, we impose restrictions. But those restrictions come after the market has said what its value is. So we let the market adjust itself. Then we come along and say, if you want to charge more than 20% of what the market would fetch, we don't allow that. So you have different opinions of halacha lemaisa. Let me tell you where something like this came up and why it's very important to understand this halacha fully. The Mi Yeshiva has, Baruch Hashem, a lot of younger light, thousands. And apartments in Ma'alot Daf and Ramat Eshkol are rented out for exorbitant fees. And it's very difficult when you're getting $300 a month in the yeshiva to pay $2,500 rent in Ramat Eshkol for a hole or something, or $1,500, whatever they charge, and people complained. They got a takana signed by Rabbanim to make a ceiling for how much you can rent it out. Now, let's think about it. So first of all, price controls can only work if everybody is on board and if everybody wants to keep those price controls. Because what happens is everybody's a Talmud Chacham. So I really rented for that amount of money, b'tnai that you gave me money before. Or you rented out, I'm renting you the apartment for this, but the water and the electricity, to use the water and electricity, you have to pay another $1,000. The ingenuity, the shtikach Torah that came out of that was awesome. That's very good. Then you have somebody who has the different rav, and the different rav said the rabbanon don't know what they're talking about. So that created the market of the different rav. He became a very popular rav, whoever said, and so on. But there's another piece of this puzzle, two more pieces of the puzzle.
I mean, if they did their homework, they should know what happens when you have rent control in a place like New York. The housing deteriorates.
So I don't think that was a concern, but let me tell you two other concerns. Again, within the framework of halacha, one is, and what about the person who owns the apartment? Many of those apartments are owned by Yungalite, who moved to Kiryat Sefer, or Bet Shemesh, and rented out this apartment, and that's where they made parnassa from. So one man's parnassa is the other person's price. So here's a wealthy American guy who's come for 2 years and can't afford it. Here's a younger man, he got an apartment in Malot Daphne when he got married, and now he's moved out to there. There's no one hero, one villain. There's two sides to it. Like the rush over here. Where somebody, by not allowing goods coming from China, I'm paying. I would like to. All these people that cheered somebody who said he's going to stop importing goods from China, I'd like to tell them, would you like a shirt to cost $65? If you're interested in paying that, then we have you're not going to be able to buy shirts for $5 if you don't import from somewhere else. Make up your mind. You can't have it both ways. That's an issue. Halachically, is a problem. Two. Three. At the end of the day, there's just X amount of apartments. The only thing that you're doing is you are simply shifting who's going to live in the apartment. There are only 100 apartments. There are 500 apartments, 1,000 apartments. It's not as if apartments are standing empty or whatever it is. There are just X amount of apartments. So either people will get it by paying for it, or people will get it by getting around the system, like in Russia. You didn't get it by paying for it, you got it by knowing somebody who knows where to get it from. You can't create more apartments than there are. And this is one of the things, like the housing shortage in Israel, if it's based on an arbitrary tax the government is putting on top of you to raise it, is one thing. So if there are apartments sitting empty and people need apartments, then you can make a takana. But if the takana results in not having the same amount of apartments, then you're not creating any more high, and that's why letting the market determine the price means something. Everybody wants to rent out their apartment. So if we can get a price, a crazy price like $2,000 for three tiny rooms, it's because there are so many people who need apartments. Someone's going to have to live in Malot Daphne, someone's going to have to live in Romania, someone's going to have to live in Kiryat Sefer. So either allow economics to determine, which is the least of all evils, or the Rosh Yeshiva called up and said, you must rent out this person. I once had a story. I was sitting up one night in my house, and almost like out of a movie, this was in Eretz Yisrael, now it's at Bira, the door flies open. It was like, whoa. Like two people just, flew in. And they're arguing, yelling, screaming. One of these people had an apartment he was renting out. The other person had rented the apartment, was leaving back to America, and had wanted his brother to take over his apartment. His brother was going to come live there. The person who rented it out rented it to someone else, and he was about to rent it out, whatever. And he was very upset. He felt he had told me rent it to his brother, or his brother deserves it first. I know, sort of a bar mitzvah of sorts, and whatever. And that was the argument. They were both very upset. So they asked me what they should do. I said, keep jacking up the price till one of them falls off. That's the smartest way to go about it. So the guy says to me, what if you can't jack up anymore? He said, no such thing. Let's try it. How much did you take from him? $1,500? $1,700. Your brother wants it? Does the other guy want it? Keep going. And it was ludicrous, because the person who wanted it for his brother had no taina whatsoever. There was no taina, no tvia. I just placated him. I said, I think the other person is right, but he didn't treat you nicely enough. He should apologize. That was my achra. But I told him, you keep jacking up. That's the reality. If there's one diamond, the reason why diamonds are so expensive is because they're not that many of them, and many people want them. If people stop wanting diamonds, what?
They are artificially constrained. There's actually tons and tons of diamonds.
So again, so that's a problem, and for some people it might be chay nefesh. I don't know. That's. But I'm saying it's. So let's sum up this piece over here. basically, there is a makom of intervention for public good. It applies to things that are necessities, and it pashtus, the logical thing is that it's a get of chai nefesh. The mitzvah achicha imach is to make sure that everybody in Klal Yisrael has means to live, which is a basic substance. We have to take into account, A, we have to limit it to things like that. So that's why I felt when the other thing about this apartment, if they would have made the takana for the low-end apartments, like the apartment the that's really at the end of town, so that minimally everybody can afford something, they'd be on a lot stronger grounds halachically. Two, if you are interfering with market forces that will create a shortage, you have a problem. If you are undercutting other people who are going to lose something because of it, you have a problem. These are things that you have to consider on the other side. Those are the things I wanted to point out here. So we sort of finished these topics. In other words, market forces, regulation, and the hardest sugya, regulation due to public good. I want to list two more things, and again, we don't have enough time to develop all the ideas, but ten lechachem yechmoid. I wanted to bring in two more items with regard to economy that I think are very important to know. One is on page 25, and let me tell you, you get the following statements. We see eye to eye with Republican Party, Libertarian Party, welfare doesn't, no welfare, no Medicaid, no Obamacare, no this, no that, the other thing, whatever it is. Like I said when I started out, one of my caveats is that we're not automatic bedfellows with anybody who comes around. I'm happy to say on this issue we have the same interests, but we need to develop our own hashkaf and understanding to a degree that is ours, not anybody else's, nobody else's agenda. We'd spoken about that the market forces are obvious, universal. These are facts, and the takanis, whether they apply or not, I have no idea, and it doesn't really interest us. But let's go to charity. Charity is already pierced market forces regulation. These are pure religious obligations. Is there something that we can say is so basic that it's universal or not? There's a bit of a chaya that I want to share with you, and this is on page 25. He speaks about stone. V'zehu bira kosva derech ha-pshat. Anshe stone roim v'chatoim la-shem me'ot. What does that mean? Shoye chetom magia la-shem. And he brings the psukim and so on. And he says like this. U'lefi shehoye tedirim b'chet hazeh. Because they were so, this was them. It wasn't they happened to Averis here and there. This was stone. The essential stone. Lekach nigma gzardinam olav. Sharei says, Ein lecha uma ba'olam shelo yasu tzedaka elam elu. There's no nation in the world that doesn't help each other. V'anshestoim ha'im ma'asim ba. The idea of helping the other was ma'as. V'yachzorim betachlis. Achzorim doesn't mean cruel. Achzorim means uncaring, insensitive. V'afa b'shleta Torah dayan. So he says, where did the Nabi come? Was it one? It's not one of Zayim Yisrael Noach. They certainly weren't Chayev in Torah. Hine hat stoko min ha-mitzvahs ha-muskolos. Helping people, charity, is something that is basic. It's innate to human being. V'dover mitu of who? It's disgusting. Shir odam es mino mutl berov. He sees a human being hungry. V'ashev esaveya, and he's wealthy and full, mikol tov, veinim rachman vachas nafshe, alachas kama kama mishu masay, like the Dr. Scruton spoke, somebody who's your nation, v'dorim v'yachas, and your city fellow, v'alkein avdan shas bachan shestoim, shemonu mosa, v'lokna kama saniyah. So, the Rabbeinu Bechaya says, a minimal level of care about your fellow country people, or any human being, that's starving to death, is something that is essential to being a human being. And if you're lacking that, then you're not worthy of existence. He says it's muskolos. This is not, it's not an ideal, a theological ideal. This is something that should be innate. And if you don't have it innate in you, then you can't be called a human being. That's what Rabbi Mechai is saying. It's an incredible, and therefore a person needs to ask himself, and again, I don't want to go into mechanics of Obamacare, anything like that. In a country as wealthy as America, to have people laying in a gutter, not getting help they need, is unthinkable. What's the best way to do it? How should we do it? There are good reasons to do it in different ways, but at the end of the day, this is a very, very powerful point. And somebody gets up and says, it's not my business, I couldn't care less, as a nation, is running the risk of overlapping with Rabbi Bechaya. It's an extraordinary Rabbi Bechaya. That's one thing that I wanted to mention, and I think it's very important when we're talking about these inyanim. It's a very important.
Is it Medina Medina or it's?
He says, and if you walk by and you see a human being lying in dire need, it's universal. And he says, especially if it's a fellow citizen, a fellow countryman, to care. What?
Is it different for each yacht by himself, or is it different for
the? He talks about He talks about stone, and stone made the. You see in Chazal. That the gzera was on stone as a metzias. I was chatoyri maske yom. When we were young, the big Yetzirah was Ayn Rand. I don't know if I'm dating myself or not, but that was a big Yetzirah. And we all empathized with it, and we were against the welfare state, and so on and so forth. Ayn Rand plagiarized stone. She got it from stone. She actually was a hypocrite because her niece wrote about her that she actually was a very sweet and kind lady. She said she got many undeserved gifts from her. So she wasn't even so... What?
I think there were Yesh
Kogim.
Okay, but say that. Well, that... Well, But at the end of the day, a shita that says the weak should die and the strong should survive, started in stone, was continued and developed magnificently by Hitler, and we as kids read Ayn Rand. That was the end of it. What? Sorry. And also Jews. Name was Rosenberg. Yeah, of course. And the socialists were Jews. We had the communists and we had the Nazis. We had them both. They once said, there used to be a joke in Russia, 10 out of the 12 original Politburo members were Jewish. And the joke was, one guy said, "Yeah, get the two going out. We'll have Mincha now." You know, that was the. Okay, that's one thing. I wanted to say over another piece that I think would be of great interest, and this is a Shalom Shem Fol Hirsch. And since we have a Hirsch in over, what? Yes.
So I just want to just bring it down to the political scene. I don't think there's a debate in the world out there if charity is a value. The debate is whether it's. Should be government mandated or not? I think that's really so.
Well,
does it really help us? Does it inform
He does by sort of focusing it on the society. My gut feeling is he's speaking about Anshei Sdom and Sdom as a nation. The way Chazal portrayed it was built into the law. In other words, not to give tzedakah it wasn't just a lot of yechidim who were bad people. This was the ethos of the society. This was the principles.
There's a legal system which is anti-tzedakah. There's a big gap between a legal system where you must give tzedakah. There's a legal system where there's a moral code to give tzedakah, but it's not legally
necessary. So if a nation is an entity, if I'm a chuyev to, if we understand as Americans that A has to go to battle and die to protect B, then there's also an obligation on B to worry about C. In other words, you can't say somebody should worry about it, but not... A government today is such a strong entity that it's the only one that has the real power to reach out to everybody that's sick or hungry and provide minimally for it. So it's you say, yeah, the private charity will take care of it. Do you honestly think that way? Or it's just a good way of saying... I don't want tax taken, and I'll make a decision about charity or not. If the person gives millions of dollars to charity and looks for all the poor people, hungry people, and he says, I give a better government, I understand that. I'm not sure that that's the case of all the people that say it that way. What? What do you mean, private?
No, public.
You know what? I want to tell you something. If people are honestly trying, it's fine. You know, learn to tell Maharsharis. But when it's an excuse, it's hypocritical.
So you can have, if the government makes it kedai for people to give charity, then it's worth the same thing.
100%. So if it's a country, if somebody sits down and worries about it, someone says we have X amount of people die without getting any medical care, and so on and so forth. If we'll do this, this, and this, it'll rectify. That's fine. As long as somebody actually felt a moral obligation, that's fine. In Eretz Yisrael, the Mitzvah says so. It's a very homogeneous society, and everybody feels that Christ. There are different ways to do it. And if a person genuinely does it, but you know, I'm a little bit of a cynic on this, that when people say they don't want to be taxed because the government doesn't look at the dollars, I think the dick is the ratio. They don't want to be taxed, you know. It can work both ways, that's correct.
Taxation can be a problem, but it alienates people from each other rather than building social bonds. Meaning, it's not the model of the community where you had everybody knew each other, we knew that we're giving stuff to our people.
Correct.
So this needs, you know, the details are more...
So I don't care if somebody came up with a real plan and showed that he really was concerned and cared and put a lot of thought into it, and it would involve giving money. At the end of the day, to feed starving people and dying and help sick people needs money. Whether I'm giving it to a private organization, to the government, to this or that, if I show my wallet and I say, I'm giving it to this and this stocker fund who I think knows how to administer it, I hear the argument. But when the person's vague about the stockers that he gave, then it's lacking, this area.
Does it matter how they got to the situation?
At the end of the day, it doesn't. It's smart. At the end of the day, if somebody's dying, you can't say, well, you were a dope addict all your life. This is your end.
Yeah, but if he needs 2 years, one for his kid, one for himself.
Huh? Well, I'm sorry?
Right.
So definitely a smart thing would be, how do we break that? It's definitely much smarter to deal with it for the source, but again, halachically, if a guy comes to your doorsteps and says, I'm not working, but I'm hungry, so you do what you can. That's...
Okay. There was studies made, I think I can't remember the name, might be Westbrook.
Yeah.
The study says it comes down to people who give charity are against government charity, and the people in favor of it give much less charity. In general, the people like Biden or whatever give tiny amounts of charity.
I mean that those are Reagan didn't give much money either. They once had how much he gave when he spoke at the private sector. He gave a few pennies. It was much embarrassing what he gave on his.
No, I'm saying in general, he did the numbers.
Isn't this ultimate what causes a society's destruction? I mean, you see all the terrible things the Medrash says that Zdoim did, and still the pasuk in Yecheskel says, which the Ben Mechayk, the reason why they were destroyed was because they didn't do Chesed. They did horrible things. That was the instructor.
Sometimes you do. Let me give you an example. You have people who have kindness to them, but they can become violent, they become upset, they become angry, whatever it is. But you have people that don't care about the other person. There's something missing. There's a person who gives a lot of stuff.
Shali shali b'shalach shalach is worse than shali shali.
In a certain sense, exactly.
One is bad meat and one's meat.
Rev Soloveitchik once spoke about novel. And he said, Novel was the quintessential American self-made man. My sheep, my cattle, my possessions. I'm a self-made man. What right does he have to impose? He says, Novel was the quintessential American we're proud of. That was his, this is... Okay, I want to do... I'm sorry, what?
That's very good.
There's one more thing in the economic sphere I want to touch. It's a beautiful Rav Hirsch, and let me explain to you why. For many reasons, but the thing, when we speak about Torah and Derech Eretz, the mistake is to think of it as a heter. You can also do other things. You think of it as also keeping mitzvahs while you're working in whatever it is. Rav Hirsch was a giant who was able to see Torah branch out at the bottom of the mountain, like we said yesterday. And that was godless in his perspective, in his vision, how he saw things. He has here a piece. There were two pieces. I'm going to deal only one now. There's a piece here where he speaks about the complicated system of selling land in halacha. For those of you who ever learned Bahar and Bukhosai, in the end of Bahar, and you sell the land, and it comes back, you have the Yevil, and it creates a whole myriad. It sounds very complicated and very unwieldy, and what's the point of it? So he says the following. This is an extraordinary point, which is, it's really enlightening in how Torah flows down into the world. He said, the relationship between land and capital is complex for the following reasons. A disinherited group of people are trouble. People feel they belong to a country, they feel obligated, they have a makom, and that makes for a very, very stable society. On the other hand, land is frozen, and you can't capitalize on it, and then you're stuck. It's like somebody has a business that's worth millions of dollars, but he can't expand it because the millions of dollars are just things that can't be sold, can't be traded, can't be leveraged, nothing. So you have here a dilemma, so to speak, or two opposite poles, each one of them extremely destructive. To have people that can become disinherited and become a landless class is looking for trouble. Look at all the societies that are very, very... America, most people own something, and there's a stability, and you go to South American countries, this where you have, you know, vast amounts of people that are shiftless and kind of so on, real problem. So the Torah is said like this: every single person at Israel has a place that's his, that's frozen. You can't sell your nachla forever. On the other hand, you can capitalize on it, and by you're basically leasing it. So the Torah gave a mechanism for keeping everybody with a makom that's his, and allowing for capitalization so that you could buy a tractor, you can do stuff like that, by leasing out part of land and so on. That's the beauty of the system. It's an extraordinary piece. It's sort of shining, like the Moshe gave before. He's taking halachas that to us seem gzeiras hakasevs, and it's certainly not right to understand these halachas as being because of it. In other words, the halacha is not limited to this. But let me explain, I guess, where I'm coming from. We spoke yesterday about the model of, you know, theoretical math and physics and engineering and the wash machine handyman. Torah itself, we have a halacha, it says Drocher Darchei Noah. Drocher Darchei Noah means that Torah itself flows into this world in a way that's compatible and positive, even in this world activities. It's not something that is in contrast. At sometimes it can be challenging. Fasting Yom Kippur is not pleasant, but it's something which, in the bigger picture, is positive. It's so these halachas of having Chayim HaSol, the Shoresh starts in Olam HaZayonis. In other words, it's because everybody has a Kines Mokim and so on and so forth. But when it lands in this world, it makes sociological and economic sense. That's the mock of it. So Torah halachas sometimes, they might contradict an immediate impulse. I'm selling the land, sold the land, for good. But in the end of it, the halachic system allows for very productive economic sense. That's the point that I feel is in Rav Hirsch, and it's extraordinary. It's worth it. This is another point also that I brought out, but that's what I wanted to do on this economic year. So just briefly, we'll sum up, and if there's a minute or two questions, then I want to go on to the next piece. We went through some brief sketches about economy of Torah. One is, the motivation is definite profit, and you can't take that out of the system and the system would work. Two, despite the fact that profit is motivation, and the market itself, not despite, the market itself therefore is a recognized and valid entity as deciding fair price and so on and so forth, there are regulatory mechanisms that society can use for a variety of reasons, going from making the marketplace inherently fair and predictable, so, you know, law and order and not hoarding and so on and so forth, to having regulations that allow for common good. And then we got to the final point, which is the concept of Chayei Nefesh and Paschal Chiyuse, there that for to allow everyone to have the potential to earn a livelihood in terms of a business that's not destroyed by someone else, in terms of being able to afford basic commodities, and that is appropriate to enact those laws, But it has to be counterbalanced by other issues as well. Will it create negative effects in the market that will destroy any good you did? Will it affect other people in any ways that are bad and so on? And is the person going to lose by keeping these halachas and so on? That was the sketch that we did at that. We also spoke about tzedakah, despite the fact that for us it's a halacha, very clear halacha, there's a part of tzedakah at a very elementary level, which really speaks to the heart or the core of what a human being is. That's Ad Kan, the Zidi Kan. I wanted to go back to some of the issues because I feel I hear these issues coming up again and again, and I would like to sort of focus. So maybe we'll just do another recording. I don't want to keep this separate, and you know, this is Ad Kan was the economy stuff. Okay.